This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the les, bi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And Jennifer Renee.
And J.D. Doyle.
We have a pretty exciting show tonight, and Deborah, why don't you let the audience know what we're going to do?
Well, we're going to get the Inside the Beltway of Beyond report from David Elliott in Washington, D.C. Ron Halbinka will tell us what is going on for this year's Jungle Party fundraiser. The Homo Revolution Tour hits Houston on...
Hip-hop homo.
Okay.
I didn't know there was hip-hop.
The Hip-Hop Homo Revolution hits Houston on April 6th, and J.D. will talk with the lead artist, Deadly, and the tour manager about gay hip-hop. April is recognized as Counseling Awareness Month and Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. So we'll have a discussion with Allison Vaught of the Montrose Counseling Center to talk about programs at the center. And closing out, we'll have folks from the Alley Theater's Act Out event this coming Thursday, featuring the latest production, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Well, that all sounds very exciting, and David Elliott will be calling in shortly so we can get started with the show. But I do want to take a little personal note and thank everybody who came out to the event on Thursday night.
That was the event that was honoring Jack Polinsky's 25 years of activism in Houston. It was declared Jack Polinsky Day in the city of Houston. Much deserved.
And New Orleans.
And New Orleans as well. That's right.
Mayors really?
Of two cities. And really, a lot
Jack gets around.
He does, apparently, because a lot of friends came out. It was a very successful fundraiser for the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, and I think there's not enough of a way of telling Jack thank you for all he's done, but I'm sure it was nice to get some appreciation after all these years.
Well, it was a lot of fun.
You even had an article in the Chronicle about
it. Big picture, too.
Yeah. Very good. So we're going to do the news wrap from This Way Out, and then we'll be back. No, we're not. Jack is shaking his head. He's engineering tonight. First of all, he's got to get David Elliott on the line, make sure that that is set up. So gay hip-hop is even featured on the cover of the new Adult
Smart
magazine.
And that's one of the artists. The artist on the cover is Ms. Fontaine. She's one of the artists, one of the 10 artists performing this Friday night at the Homo Revolution Tour at Club Dignity. And I'm real excited about this. I've been planning for this interview tonight for a while, and also this month's Queer Music Heritage will be on gay hip-hop. And so I've been researching this for weeks, and I'm really tuned in to who these artists are, and they're all good. It's a variety of sound.
And didn't you say you are featured in a movie about
gay
hip-hop?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. There was a movie made a couple of years ago called Pick Up the Mic, and it features many of the artists who are in this tour, and it digs into their lives, their struggles, has openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans, hip-hop artists. And they followed a bunch of these artists around a couple of years ago, including Miss Money from Houston.
All right.
And her guest that weekend, Dutch Boy, a very instrumental figure. They were guests on Jimmy Carter's show. I was also participating in that interview. So I ended up in the film in about 3 to 5 seconds. I haven't timed it exactly. You can see the side of my head.
And is Jimmy on there, too?
Jimmy's
from
on there.
After hours?
He's on a little more than I got.
All right.
But he was running the board, so, you know, let him do it.
Okay.
We have David Elliott on. This phone system just gave this big flash.
Okay.
So hopefully.
Well, it is a full moon, and you know how we do with the phones sometimes. They just won't cooperate. But let's say hello to David Elliott. Hello.
Well, good evening, Jeff.
Thank you.
Good evening, David.
We're so happy to hear you.
Well, hello.
So what's going on inside the Beltway and beyond, David?
Well, you know, Deb and Jack, I have to tell you that tonight we have somber news to report out of Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Many of your listeners tonight may recall that up until a few years ago, there was a statewide newspaper serving the LGBT community in Texas called the Texas Triangle. The weekly newspaper was primarily based in Austin, but also was distributed in Houston and, to a lesser extent, in Dallas. Well, last Thursday, the founder and publisher of the Texas Triangle, Kay Longcope, a good friend of mine, a good colleague, died of pancreatic cancer. She was 69 years old. And tonight, I'd like to say a few words about Kay, if I could. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about the disease that took her. Kay was a journalist's journalist. She was a reporter's reporter. She had news ink running through her veins. As a college student, she worked on the Daily Texan at my alma mater, the University of Texas at Austin. And later, she would become one of the nation's first reporters to cover LGBT issues for a metropolitan newspaper. She covered gay and lesbian issues for the Boston Globe. Years later, after she retired and moved to Austin, she noticed right away that there is no local newspaper that really focused on issues important to the LGBT community. So she launched the Texas Triangle, a newspaper which at the time was one of the few lesbian-owned newspapers in the entire country. I was lucky enough to have served for 1 year as the Texas Triangle's managing editor. During that time, a religious right group called the Texas Family Association tried to put the Texas Triangle out of business by boycotting our advertisers, holding protests in front of their businesses, and reading their names on a local religious radio station. And you know what? By the time the boycott was called off, something wonderful had happened. Far from losing money, advertising revenue coming into the Texas Triangle actually increased 40%. Basically, Austin wasn't going to put up with the Texas Family Association's anti-gay intolerance. Kay stood strong, and the community, gay, straight, bisexual, whatever, stood with Kay and stood by the Triangle. You know, last week, the trade publication editor and publisher, upon learning of Kay's death, described the Texas Triangle as a publication, quote, with seriousness of purpose, unquote. What they meant was, we printed news. We printed investigative stories. We endorsed candidates. We didn't accept sex ads, one of the few LGBT publications in the entire country to set that standard. We didn't have steamy inserts. And because of our reputation, we were the first LGBT publication in Texas to successfully solicit advertising from so-called, quote-unquote, mainstream businesses like serious car dealerships, banks, and what have you. Now, I want to say a few words about cancer, because it seems like we've lost a lot of people to cancer lately. We lost Ann Richards back in September. And then, in late January, we lost Molly Ivins, whose passing we discussed on this program 2 months ago. Most recently, we've learned that Elizabeth Edwards, part of the Edwards team that is running for president, has had a recurrence of breast cancer. And although it is treatable, it is also incurable. And just last week, we learned that White House spokesman Tony Snow has experienced a return of colon cancer, and it has spread to his liver. This is serious business. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death among men, behind lung cancer. And, you know, we have to say that both Elizabeth Edwards and Tony Snow have displayed courageous optimism in the face of this potentially devastating news. The good news, we've come a long way, baby, when it comes to our discussion of cancer as a society. You know, back in the 1970s, the subject was really stigmatized. Many people felt they just couldn't talk about it. And today, there is hardly any social stigma at all. We hold walkathons, marathons. We wear wristbands and lapels. different forms of cancer, even if their own colors associated with them, for fundraising purposes. Indeed, we raise more money for cancer than we do for heart disease, even though it has been estimated that five times as many people die from heart disease than from all forms of cancer combined. And at times, though, it really does seem that coverage, you know, particularly coverage of well-known people with cancer, is ample, if not really overabundant. I mean, consider this. When John Edwards announced his candidacy for president, he never got on 60 Minutes by talking about his plan to raise taxes to pay for national health insurance. He never got a People magazine spread by apologizing for his vote to authorize the Iraq war. You know, when he announced, he drew rather modest coverage. But after the announcement that Elizabeth Edwards had a recurrence, the couple was indeed featured in a People magazine spread, and they were on 60 Minutes. And, you know, for John Edwards, it's kind of too bad that this moment in the media spotlight turns on such tragic news. I mean, as Elizabeth Edwards herself put it, she said, quote, "I can't turn on the TV without seeing me, can't open the newspaper without seeing me, and honestly, I'm sick to death of seeing me." And at some point, it kind of seems like all of this attention that's focused on cancer becomes maybe perhaps less about the people with cancer and more about our fixation upon it, what's happened lately. And when I say that, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the memories of the dear friends we have lost. Again, Ann Richards, Molly Ivins, and my dear friend who taught me so much, Kate Longcope. The truth of the matter, and it is a good truth, is that much of the time now, cancer has become a chronic disease, much like AIDS. Certainly, in many cases, it can be cured. In Elizabeth Edwards' case, you know, her cancer is not curable, but it is treatable. She says she now knows what she will die of. But we can hope and we can pray that her death is many, many years away. And, you know, in closing, if I can veer back to the political for just a moment, we can also hope and pray that a new Congress and eventually a new White House will see to it that each and every one of the millions of Americans who fight these life-threatening diseases will one day have complete and total access to the health care they need to carry on their fight.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. It's certainly been a busy day up in Washington with the Supreme Court.
Well, it has been, Jack, with the Supreme Court, and also with a campaign finance report coming out with
absolutely.
The presidential candidates.
And it looks like McCain at this point has a rather disappointing return.
Well, we had three or four surprises that came out with the campaign finance reports. It wasn't really a surprise that Hillary Clinton was able to raise $26 million. That wasn't so much of a surprise. It was perhaps a surprise that Republican candidate Mitt Romney did as well as he did, raising something like $22 million. And as you yourself note, it was a surprise that John McCain came in third. We have another surprise waiting in the wings. Either tomorrow or more likely Wednesday, we are going to hear about Barack Obama's campaign fundraising. And the buzz is that he's going to come in somewhere between $23 million and Hillary Clinton's $26
million. Wow.
He's going to be way, way up there, maybe a little bit behind her, not that much. But, Jack and Deb, I have to ask you, do you know what the biggest surprise of all is?
Tell us.
The Democratic presidential candidates are going to end up raising considerably more money combined than the Republican presidential candidates. That is a signal, that is a product, that is an indicator of the incredible energy that is out there for Democratic presidential candidates running in 2008. You know, there's going to be this primary. We don't know who's going to emerge, but I cannot remember an election. Well, perhaps 1970, I cannot remember an election when the Democrats were positioned better to come through in less than 2 years from now and take the White House.
Well, and a lot of that has to be said about how arrogant the present administration is to the entire public of this country.
Well, we see it time and again, you know, just recently, and this is a story that's not getting a lot of attention across the country, but we see this big controversy beginning to get out there about 40 political appointees to the GAO, the General Administration Office, who are gathered in one place, and they heard a presentation from an aide to Karl Rove, and they were asked how they could use the federal government and how they could use federal facilities to further the reelection of endangered Republican congressmen in 2008.
Absolutely, and I mean, it's just one thing after another. Just like today, the Supreme Court ruling that the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, should actually do their job.
Shocking.
Yes. I mean,
shocking. I am shocked.
Yes. And yesterday on 60 Minutes, there was this really great segment on the, you know, the drug plan that they did for the senior citizens of how a number of the key people in the administration and in Congress, well, I guess mostly in Congress, are now employed by the drug industry because of the way the bill was written. The fact that it was written that the government isn't even allowed to negotiate, you know, better prices for the government. They showed one example of how a drug is cost ten times more than it does for another government agency of the Veterans Administration. I mean, this is the hypocrisy of this administration, talking about conservatives and let the business run, you know, run things. They already had the Veterans Administration system of how they dealt with the drug companies worked, and it worked very well. Rather than just copying it, they just did this whole system where they can award the drug companies more and more money.
Jack, you know, President Abraham Lincoln envisioned a government that was of the people, for the people, and about the people. This White House has redefined that and is running an administration that is of the money, for the money, and about the money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And David, you live there.
And I enjoy it. Washington, D.C. is a great place. Yeah, we have these Republicans. They're a couple of miles away from me, you know. But we also have a community that is the most wonderful, diverse, liberal, progressive community in the United States. You know, we have all sorts of people living here. And it's such an honor and privilege to be walking down the street and hearing people speak in three or four different languages and wondering what they're talking about. And not everybody is the same. And that's what I love about Washington, D.C.
Well, there was one little article in the Chronicle the other day about how a particular congressman from East Texas made the suggestion that the people who live in Washington shouldn't have their own representative in Congress, but we're their representatives. So there was this, I guess, this piece put on a blog somewhere telling them to call this particular congressman with all the problems with the potholes and every other problem that's happening in Washington, since he's so generous to take up the cause for Washington.
Yeah, you know, I had a little bit of fun with that, I have to confess, and it's true. And, you know, that guy, he probably lives out in a gated community in the suburbs.
Right.
And it doesn't really interact with those of us who actually live here very much.
Well, David, thank you for joining us. And what do you do for your real job?
Well, for my real job, Jack, I'm the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can find our blog at www.deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com. Again, that's www.deathpenaltyusa@blogspot.com.
And David Elliott joins us usually the first Monday of every month and gives us a perspective of what's going on in Washington. Thank you, David.
Good night and take care.
I'm Don Lupo.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the gay and lesbian community for the week ending March 31st, 2007. A crowd estimated at from 500 to 1,000 people marched in New York City on March 29th, and 27 were arrested as ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, celebrate its 20th birthday. Demonstrators demanded a single-payer healthcare system and drug price controls. The most vocal of ACT UP's original founders, Larry Kramer, had called for renewed street activism in a speech at the city's LGBT center 2 weeks earlier. "I couldn't believe so many people turned up," he told gay journalist Rex Wachner. "This was an extraordinary start for the new ACT UP, with a turnout bigger than any of us hoped for or imagined." The demonstrators marched from the Federal Building to City Hall to Trinity Church to the New York Stock Exchange to the Charging Bull sculpture at Bowling Green Park, where 27 people were arrested when they blocked traffic with a die-in. Among those taken into custody was Paz magazine founder Sean Strub. The marchers chanted, "Same old bullish 20 years later," and "Healthcare for people, not for profit." According to spokeswoman Kathy Renna, this protest kicks off a campaign by activists to ensure that universal access to healthcare becomes a major campaign issue for candidates during the 2008 presidential race. The marchers included activists from ACT UP New York, ACT UP Philadelphia, the African Services Committee, Housing Works, the Metro New York Healthcare for All campaign, Physicians for a National Health Plan, Healthcare Now, and the New York City AIDS Housing Network. "It was a mixture of ACT UP, old and new," Kramer said. "I saw old friends I hadn't seen in years and didn't know were still alive." He said an organizational meeting is planned for mid-April to make important decisions on how to govern ourselves and choose our missions. "I hope we can go on from here and build it into something extraordinary once again." A much smaller anniversary demonstration took place in San Francisco the same day as the New York March. Co-organizer Michael Petrellis said about 50 to 75 people marched on the sidewalk from 18th Street and Castro to a site on Market Street where they staged a sidewalk die-in. There were no arrests.
The same cannot be said for a group of young activists traveling by bus to several conservative Christian colleges around the U.S., those that make life a living hell for LGBT students by demanding their silence and expelling any who come out. It's the second year that Soul Force, an ecumenical organization dedicated to fighting what it calls spiritual violence against LGBT people, has sponsored the bus-riding young activists. They've encountered much uglier resistance this year than last. Their buses have been defaced more often, jeering crowds have met them on their arrival at some locations, and there have been far more arrests, generally for trespassing, than last year. This week alone, a dozen equality riders were arrested for staging a sit-in at the office of Albert Moeller, the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. They were protesting Moeller's highly publicized comments that while a biological basis for homosexuality may be proven, prenatal treatment to reverse a homosexual orientation would be biblically justified.
There were also three arrests this week at the University of Cumberland's, a small Baptist institution in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Soulforce said in a statement that the three were on a public sidewalk near the entrance to the school when they were arrested. 22 riders were taking part in the protest, walking up and down in front of the college, singing songs, and attempting to engage students in conversations about homosexuality. Equality Ride organizer Jake Raytan was the first to be arrested. He said he was taken into custody without warning simply for standing still on the sidewalk. Two students from the university who witnessed his arrest stood without moving on the sidewalk nearby and were then also arrested. Soul Force organizers said that some students expressed fear that the university would retaliate against them if they spoke to the young LGBT activists. The University of Cumberland's, like many of the campuses being targeted by the Equality Riders, has a policy stating that any student who engages in or promotes sexual behavior not consistent with Christian principles, including sex outside marriage and homosexuality, may be suspended or asked to withdraw from the university. Jason Johnson was also among the Soul Force protesters. He said University of Cumberland's administrators expelled him last year when they found out he is gay.
Officials at Mississippi College in Clinton, Mississippi, had five more equality riders arrested for walking onto university property this week, and local authorities decided to bring their cases to trial. Some had prior convictions for civil disobedience-style trespassing, which apparently angered the judge. All five riders were fined $250 and sentenced to 10 days in jail. The judge said that the jail sentences would be suspended as long as the young activists aren't arrested on any other charges for the next 2 years. The three riders with prior convictions were also sentenced to 4 days community service, but they vowed after completing their service to rejoin the ride when it reaches Alabama.
Two buses of Equality Riders, one heading east and the other west, are crisscrossing the country attempting to engage in a dialogue with students at 32 conservative Christian colleges. In addition to Mississippi College, officials at three of the four other schools the eastbound bus has visited so far, Missouri's Central Bible College, Oklahoma Baptist University, and Baylor University in Waco, Texas, have had riders arrested as soon as they set foot on school property. At Baylor, five Equality Riders and one student were taken into custody on criminal trespassing charges after they wrote messages affirming LGBT students in chalk on campus sidewalks. Their bail was set at $2,000 each, which is equivalent to the maximum fine under Texas law. There were also arrests in early March at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. A mother and her son were charged with trespassing when they attempted to deliver a letter to university officials outlining what they say is homophobia at the school.
Meanwhile, two U.S. seminaries for conservative Judaism will soon be accepting their first openly gay and lesbian applicants. The Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies, based at the University of Judaism in Los Angeles, announced in mid-March that they had admitted a gay man and a lesbian for the fall semester. And this week, the New York City-based Jewish Theological Seminary, considered to be the movement's flagship religious school, announced that LGBT students will now be considered for its rabbinical and cantorial schools. They were the first such action since the conservative branch decided to ease its ban on the ordination of queer clergy. In December, a panel of scholars who interpret Jewish law for conservative Jewish congregations voted to allow each seminary to decide independently whether to admit openly gay or lesbian students. But the Committee on Jewish Law and Standards also said that synagogues that consider same-gender relations contrary to Jewish law should be allowed to bar lesbi-gay clergy from their pulpits. Conservative Judaism holds the middle ground in American Judaism, adhering to tradition while allowing some change for modern circumstances. Reform and Reconstructionist branches have admitted LGBT religious students for some time, while Orthodox Judaism bars women as well as gays and lesbians from ordination. And the conservative movement's Schechter Rabbinical Seminary in Jerusalem announced this week, in response to the actions of its U.S. counterparts, that there will be no change in its refusal to ordain non-celibate lesbian and gay rabbis.
Arab lesbians defied Islamic protesters and societal prejudice to gather at a rare conference this week in the northern Israeli city of Haifa. Many of the attendees said they were sad that the only place safe enough to hold a conference for Arab lesbians was in a Jewish area of the city, which has a mixed Arab-Jewish population. Poetry readings, music, and Arab women rappers entertained the conference, called Home and Exile in Queer Experience, organized by Azwat, a group for Arab lesbians that has members in Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza Strip. Homosexuality, which is strictly forbidden by Islam, is considered taboo among most of Israel's Arab citizens, who make up about 20% of the country's population. Outside the conference hall, women protesters in headscarves and long loose robes held up signs reading, "God, we ask you to guide these lesbians to the true path." Security was tight. Attendance was by invitation only, and perhaps 20 women attended the conference. Reporters were not allowed to take photographs, use tape recorders, or identify any of the attendees by name.
But finally, an openly gay man known and admired around the world, Sir Elton John, celebrated his 60th birthday on March 24th by throwing a lavish party at a New York cathedral, followed by an emotional concert at Madison Square Garden the next evening. Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne, Donatella Versace, Pierce Brosnan, and Elizabeth Hurley were among 400 guests who attended the star-studded birthday bash at Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine. The party included a video tribute to Sir Elton, who sold more than 200 million albums worldwide, produced by his civilly united spouse, David Furnish. It featured messages from Sir Paul McCartney, Rod Stewart, Celine Dion, and Jim Carrey. The Madison Square Garden concert also marked John's record-setting 60th performance there. Michael Caine, Rosie O'Donnell, Barbara Walters, K.D. Lang, and Kiefer Sutherland were among several celebrities in the audience. Introduced by former U.S. President Bill Clinton, the pop star kicked off his 30-song concert, appropriately enough, with 60 Years On. He was also joined on stage by Whoopi Goldberg, Robin Williams, and songwriting partner Bernie Taupin, who led the audience in singing Happy Birthday. "Thank you for making my birthday special," he told a cheering crowd, concluding the concert with his first hit, "Your Song."
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 31st, 2007. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Don Lupo.
Hi, we're True Soul, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jennifer Renee.
K.D. Doyle.
Oh, yes.
And who's our guest tonight?
Brian
Levinka.
Yes.
We wouldn't have got that as nearly as good as you did.
I was going to just stumble all over it and just be embarrassed entirely, and so good. Brian, what are you here for?
I'm here to promote the upcoming event this weekend, the Jungle 15 Weekend.
Oh. Now, what is the Jungle Weekend?
Jungle Weekend is a large fundraiser put on by the Bayou City Boys Club. The Bayou City Boys Club are a group of guys that are dedicated to raising money for HIV/AIDS in the community. And Jungle 15 is our largest fundraiser of the year.
Jungle 15.
Obviously the 15th time you've done it.
This is our 15th anniversary, yes.
I was hoping that was what it was.
Yes.
Okay, it goes to the AIDS, didn't you? Do you actually operate doing AIDS, outreach? Or what is it exactly you do? Or does the money go to some organizations?
We put on events throughout the year, of which Jungle is our largest. And we raise the money for the organizations that actually do the service, the education,
okay.
The research.
All right, good.
So we raise money to give to them.
How do you pick the organizations to give to?
We have a bid process in the fall of the year.
So they compete in a way.
Well, we get bids from everybody, and we kind of we have a little committee meeting, and we discuss
screen them and
where the money will go and what will do the best in the community.
Well, as far as let's get behind. It's going to be when again?
It starts. It's a weekend long event starting Thursday and going until Sunday, Easter Sunday.
Okay, so it's this weekend.
This weekend.
Here. Yes, well, yes, where do we get the tickets?
Well, that's a great question. They're available online on our website at junglehouston.com, or here in Houston at M2M and Meluware.
Okay, and exactly where is it being held?
The main event is being held at Warehouse Live, and this is a really excellent new venue that has come about in the community in the last year. It was voted best concert venue and best live music venue. So the sound and lighting is incredible.
Well, where is
and
it?
It's inside, I take it.
Yes, it's an inside venue. It's on the east side of downtown in the Warehouse District.
Oh, okay.
So it's just east of the convention center.
Okay, you don't know the address?
It's 813 St. Emmanuel.
Ah, good. 813 St. Emmanuel. Okay. And tell us more about the Jungle itself. What is it about? And
Jungle started 15 years ago, as we said. It started when a group of guys, for their 30th birthday, decided to get together and put on a combined joint party. They decided they wanted to do a fundraiser for that, and they decided that HIV/AIDS would be a good fundraiser. That was very successful, and now here we are 15 years later having the 15th anniversary. The Jungle comes from the fact that the first party was held at a plant warehouse. Spencer's Warehouse back in the day.
See, I thought it had some other meaning, deep meaning.
Well, it's kind of evolved over the years. You do a Jungle party 15 years in a row, it kind of, got to be creative.
It evolves? Is that what you're trying to say?
It evolves. Last year we had Space Jungle.
Okay, so what are the changes for this year?
This year we have two major changes. We are working a partnership with Bunnies on the Bayou. That's another organization that has events the same weekend. We are combining forces this year. We're kind of a joint weekend pass. So if you buy a weekend pass for Jungle events, you will also get into Bunnies on the Bayou.
Have you tied in with them before?
We've done small tie-ins, but this is kind of our first full force partnership.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Bunnies on the Bayou in the Jungle.
Well, there's a lot of things you could say there. The other major change for this year is we're going 18 and up at the main event.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to expand and kind of get a new demographic in to our party.
What was it before?
It's always been 21 and up, but we're trying to appeal to the younger generation and kind of, get
some. So you lowered it to 18 and up.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And I know you've talked about the Jungle and all. What are some of the events that are going to be going on during this during the weekend?
Well, okay, let's start Thursday night. We have a meet and greet social at Guava Lamp. We have a DJ come in from Austin, DJ Seth Cooper. Friday night we have an event at South Beach with DJ Abel, which is a large nationally known DJ. And Saturday is the big day where we have the main event at Warehouse Live with DJ Roland Belmaris. He's a Texas native. He's gone around the country and around the world and made a big name for himself. So it's kind of a coming home for a local boy. And then Saturday after the main event is the after hours held at Venue Houston with DJ Allison Calagna. And then on Sunday we have Bunnies on the Bayou. That's, you know, an event put on by Bunnies on the Bayou. And then we have a Sunday night joint event with Bunnies on the Bayou.
Where is that going to be?
That's going to be at South Beach, and that's Jamie J. Sanchez. So we're kind of co-producing an event. So that's another kind of groundbreaking thing for Jungle
Booking. So if you like to dance...
Well, there's something for everybody. I mean, we have events on Thursday that are at Guava. You can go to Bunnies on the Bayou. I mean, if you like to dance, then this is your thing. And I want to say that we've paid for the party. We've had the party completely underwritten. So at this point, everything we raise goes directly to the beneficiaries.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yes. So now it's kind of, we're in the gravy portion of the kind of the smooth
sailing. So everybody can come out and just have a good time.
Come out, have a great time, and you know that all the money goes back into the community.
Okay. And again, tell me how to get tickets.
Okay, tickets are available online at junglehouston.com and at the outlets, Mayware and MTM. And I think I should probably mention the beneficiaries. We have six this year.
I was going to ask that.
Oh, okay. There's AIDS Foundation Houston, Bering Omega Community Service, Brentwood Community Health Service, Casa de Esperanza de los Niños, Legacy Community Health Services, and Montrose Counseling Center.
Without a list, too.
He did. Y'all didn't see that out there.
I've spoken this many times. I've been promoting this party for the last month.
How does someone get involved with BCBC?
We're an all-volunteer organization, and it's kind of friends coming together and working and towards the goal of raising money for HIV/AIDS. And we're kind of on a membership drive right now, so it's very easy to get involved.
How many members are there?
We have 30 active members. We have 10 associate members. Those are kind of our young bloods that are learning the ropes. Mm-hmm. And then we have about 15 emeritus members, and those are kind of the guys.
And how many are single?
Most of them are.
That was just for our listeners' benefit.
Oh. So there'd be lots of single men out there.
Yes, that's another incentive. If you like, you know, good-looking, attractive men.
Like yourself.
Well. Okay. But, you know, we have a lot of...
They just drew you right in, didn't we?
Right?
He's blushing on radio. Is that possible?
You can see right through your radio how he's blushing.
I'm very red. We have a lot of guys coming in from out of town. We've heard from people coming from L.A., Chicago, Atlanta, D.C., New York. Of course,
this is probably one of the biggest regional events like this.
It is kind of one of the biggest in Texas, actually. We've kind of grown over the years, and we've kind of taken the number one spot.
What kind of, from last year to this year, what's the attendance you expect this year?
There's a big question mark with the 18 to 20-year-old, since we're having that. So we really don't know until the day of the event. The most we've ever had was 1,500, so we're hoping for 1,500 or more.
That's a nice crowd.
It would be a very nice crowd. So, you know, we're kind of hoping. Our ticket sales have been ahead of last year, about 20%.
Guava Lamp will never hold that many.
Well, no, not Guava Lamp, but we're thinking that Warehouse Live will.
Okay. And, we're talking about DJs every night. It starts on Thursday night.
Why
don't you give us a quick rundown again so that everybody knows that there's plenty to do from Thursday through Sunday.
There's plenty to do. You'll have, you know, your choice of many events. Thursday night is Guava Lamp with DJ Seth Cooper. Friday night is South Beach with DJ Abel. Saturday night is our main event at Warehouse Live with DJ Roland Belmaris. And then the after hours party is at Venue Houston with DJ Allison Calagna. And then, of course, with the weekend pass, you can go into Bunnies on the Bayou on Sunday, which is a great event. Starts at 2. Then after that is our combined party called Tribal Paradise at South Beach with DJ Jamie J. Sanchez.
Oh. Where do they get the DJs from? Different cities, their reputations, or what?
We kind of, they kind of go by reputation and who we think we could bring in that will bring in, you know, a crowd. And we've rotated throughout the years.
Do you try for a variety of DJ styles to...
Well, Houston is known for kind of a house type, a very vocal, happy music, so to speak. So we try to appeal to that. The South is known for kind of the happy house music.
As, okay.
Happy House.
I don't know the difference between dance music, well, house music, disco music.
There's Happy House music, and there's like the dark dungeon kind of, you know.
Ripcord.
Well, yeah. It's typically like a New York sound, and we haven't really gone down that path here in Houston.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear
that.
We
like happy music. Keep it light.
Yeah. Well, how did you get involved yourself?
Well, I got involved a couple of years ago. I attended the first Jungle at Verizon Wireless Theater when they moved there downtown.
Okay.
And I was completely impressed by how the organization had moved the Jungle from the warehouse to, it was at the Polo Grounds for a couple of years, and then it had gone to Verizon Wireless. And I was very impressed, and I was like, you know, I want to be part of this. And I think for me, the thing that kind of sealed the deal was when we gave away the money from that Jungle to the beneficiaries. And I saw exactly how much the money was needed and how appreciative they were. And, you know, that kind of, from that moment, it's kind of driven me to be a fundraiser and kind of raise money for things, for organizations that really need the money.
It's like, this is fun and this is a good thing.
You know, it's a fun time and it's a great cause. I don't have a problem asking people for money if I know it's going to a great cause, as it is in this case.
Well, what can I say to that?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, the website, the day, it's all weekend.
It's all weekend, starting Thursday, April 5th, going to Sunday, April 8th. Website is very important. All information is on the website at junglehouston.com. You can find out event information, a little history. You can buy tickets. We have our graphics there. I'm kind of proud of the website because I put a lot of effort into it, so check it out.
Oh, and when you're not doing this, you're doing what?
I'm a project engineer, so I kind of do project management on the side, so it's kind of a great segue into to doing this. I mean, I work on projects all year long, and so I kind of, Jungle's my little project now.
This is just one more project for you.
Just one more thing.
Just one more thing to organize.
Yes, exactly.
So, With all of this going on and the groups, again, I didn't make any notes, so why don't you tell us the organizations we're going to be donating to? So this is something that if you're out there, you're thinking about it, you want to cut out and dance this weekend and do some things.
If you want to see some very nice-looking gay men with no shirts on, I mean, who, you know, I'm not...
Just men.
Just men, exactly. They go to six beneficiaries, AIDS Foundation Houston, Baring Omega Community Health Community Services, Brentwood Community Foundation, the Casa de Esperanza de los Niños, Legacy Community Health Services, and Montrose Mining Company. Montrose.
Whoa.
Jeffrey Center. You got me started on the Montrose.
Well, we forgive you. Now, would you like to repeat that right this time?
Montrose Counseling Center.
Thank you. That's good.
Yes. I was thinking about where I'm going to go tomorrow night.
So where are you going tomorrow night?
No, I'm sorry. It's all Jungle all the time right now. We're steadily getting ready, and we're trying to put the best Jungle we can on. And since this is our 15th anniversary, you know, we want to make sure that this is the best one to date.
Okay. And we're with Brian...
Lavinka. I call it the family curse. My name is spelled with an H, but it's silent.
Lavinka.
Yeah, it's just there. I don't know why.
What's the heritage?
It's Czech.
Czech?
Yeah.
Of course.
The Czech people put, like, consonants, just throw them
in
there.
Just wherever they want to.
They just throw.
Lavinka.
Yeah, throw one in. So, yeah.
Website, one more time.
One more time. Let's go down the website.
www.junglehouston.com.
And... it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and Sunday.
Yes, a weekend.
And in the Sunday evening is a joint party with Bunnies on the Bayou.
At South Beach, yes.
At South Beach.
It's kind of the after party for Bunnies on the Bayou. So go to Bunnies on the Bayou, 2 to 7, and then after that you go to South Beach and kind of continue the party.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to thank the listeners of Queer Voices. I appreciate having a chance to come and talk to you all this evening.
We'll see you next year.
Well, of course.
You better.
And as long as there's a reason to raise the money for such a great cause, I'll be there.
And thank you for listening to Queer Voices.
Later for the president, later for society and the Constitution. Baby, won't you marry me? Later for the politics, religious folks and hypocrites. Loving you is all I need. Baby, won't you marry me?
Now I'll be damned if I have to hesitate on saying I do, because the public won't acknowledge my love for you. They ain't slanging no checks from under this roof right here. You don't hear me though. I promise you to do the best I can. I'm on both knees asking you to be your man. I'm talking wedding dance, diamond rings and things that bling. A ceremony held that it comes to belong with, because
I love you.
And if folks don't understand, to tell the truth, I could really give less than a damn. And any relative writing relative to us will object to a union and invitation. No matter, as long as we got the rings and best man, true family and good friends. Oh yeah, and one more correction. You won't be my lover anymore. You'll be my husband, a wife.
I know it's
the one who really wanna give my life to you.
The one who wanna give my life to you.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do. So please say I do. Let me spend the rest of life showing you that my love is true.
Come on.
So later for the president, later for society and the Constitution. Later, won't you marry me? Later for the politics, religious folks and hypocrites. Loving you is all I need. Later, won't you marry me?
Corey Fix and the radio edit version of his song Marry Me, and I really like that. He's one of the artists performing this Friday night at the Gay Hip Hop Tour coming to Houston. You'll hear more about that at the top of the hour. And coming up next is another song, very different, by an artist named Link, and it's called Change the Picture.
Change, change.
Racist. Nobody's born a homophobe. Nobody's born a bully. They learn all that stuff at home and in their churches, in the schoolyard, on the street, in the movies, on TV. Nobody's born with hate in their heart. It's what they learn from what they hear and what they see. So let's change the picture. Let's change the words. We can have a little conversation and we just might change the world. Yeah, we just might change the world. The world, 'cause nobody's born.
let's hope that we change the world.
God help us.
I'd like to see it change from somebody like Michael Berry.
Oh, yeah, what was that? You were telling me off mic. What was
well,
that? What did he do now?
He recently, and he's the acting mayor. the mayor pro tem.
The acting up mayor?
Well, more like acting up in this the case of this. He made a comment, and I'm kind of paraphrasing because I don't have the text in front of me, that Native Americans should just accept the fact that they were a conquered people.
And get over it?
Yeah, and just get over it. And that we had given them the casinos and that we had given them all this other stuff and they should just...
Did he wake up yesterday or something like that?
I don't know.
I understand that somebody elected him to the city council several times.
It wasn't me.
Oh.
Well,
he has a radio show, too.
Well, it was his radio show where he said this, so...
Well, I guess they can just say anything on radio, can't he?
Oh, well, you know, that's kind of the philosophy.
Ooh, that's we can, too,
you know,
can't we?
We try to bring people actual information,
yes.
Facts, and talk about things intelligently. Rush Limbaugh, he just states his opinion, and people think because they hear it on the radio...
Well, may I state my opinion?
Certainly you may.
I didn't make the show last Monday because I had gone to Austin. There's a bill, a House Bill 247, which is insurance non-discrimination, and it was to add to the current non-discrimination, sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. And so I went up there. The committee meeting was supposed to start at 2. It actually started a little later, around 3:30. We were scheduled, House Bill 247 was scheduled for the second bill in the list. But Representative...
And this was in committee
this was
hearings?
In committee. Yes, it had finally made committee hearings. And so I went to the House Insurance Committee, and the Representative Smitty, who is the chairperson, took House Bill 247, instead of it being on top, put it on the bottom. My intention had been to make it back for the show last week, or at least to call in. I was in the committee room. I testified at 1 a.m. in the morning. There were four Republicans there, and Sophonia Thompson and Hubert Vaux for our side.
Yay.
Stayed there until we got to, and we were the last.
Mm-hmm.
He made us stay there till the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he hoped we'd leave, but so by God, I wasn't going to leave.
What's the status of that at this time? Has it come out of committee?
It's not out of committee yet. We don't expect, or at the time, they did not expect them to vote on it out of committee till later on this week.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll know by Thursday or Friday of this week
mm-hmm.
on that one. But there are two others that are going to go into committee, have been set in committee, and that is the non-discrimination as far as employment and non-discrimination.
Housing.
Yes. So
yeah.
That's one that's very important.
Mm-hmm. And that's inclusive of sexual orientation and gender identity.
Every one of the bills that are of our interest are going back to existing bills and adding sexual orientation and gender identity or expression to it. I mean, after all, we make up about 6 to 8% of the population, depending on who you talk to, which is about 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And we are disenfranchised in the state of Texas, and we're disenfranchised.
Exactly.
So
there's also another important bill that was introduced by Representative Dutton, and it's called Corrine's Law, and it has
yes.
to do with bullying and harassment in the public schools, and hoping to find a way to end that. And it's named after a young woman whose name was Corrine, who was harassed and bullied, cyber harassed
yes.
people until she couldn't take it anymore.
Committed suicide.
Yes.
I overheard in a conversation, and I won't name the representative because it wouldn't do any good because he's, you know, an idiot anyway. But the fact was is that I overheard and says, well, hey, everybody in school gets a little bullying, as if it's normal fun and play. When somebody loses their life because of it, it's not just one of those things. And that's the kind of reactionary thinking we have up in the legislature.
Well, you know, April is one of those months that's being used for, you know, it's sexual assault awareness, it's child abuse prevention month, it's National Poetry Month, things about, you know, we recognizing all these things in a month, I was thinking, well, how can you not be aware of the violence in our society?
Yeah.
And you know, with video games and the way violence is in the media, it's horrifying how much is out there. And the messages that kids get, I mean, we heard about the little boy from Georgia that was taken off his swing set and brutalized and murdered. Then the young woman here in Houston who was murdered by her former boyfriend, who then
all kinds of horrendous things to, which, you know, we don't know what's true or false, but the thing is that, where did this guy get off? What planet did he come from?
Well, it's just that it somehow something is really wrong with our society if people even can have thoughts to do these things.
Oh yeah,
and just time and time again. So we have to be aware of it, but we need to learn more tools about how to protect certainly the children and then other people if they're in harm's way for any reason. We need to find ways to prevent it if we can, and then to provide the services and care if we need to.
And to protect ourselves, you know, I don't know whether you know, but
yes,
for sure. But about 6 weeks ago, I was assaulted and robbed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon at my apartment complex by a couple of men who, one of them ran up, grabbed my purse, and tried to get it away. If the purse hadn't broken, we'd probably still be tug at war at it. But the fact is that's happening all over the city. And unfortunately, nothing's come of it, because even though I gave a clear description of the guy in the car and his accomplice, the manpower.
Yeah,
City of Houston doesn't have the manpower.
Staffing
power. I know. I apologize to all of us out there who aren't hymns.
And we're glad that you're not. Other news division. The Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church is celebrating 35 years.
Here.
This month. And they have a whole bunch of events, including a bingo night, a golf tournament, a celebration of life, and they're going to have sermons by the author E. Lynn Harris, and also a jazz brunch and book signing with him. So we say hearty congratulations.
Absolutely.
To the folks over there.
Great organization.
Yeah, at RMCC.
Mm. Well, one thing, too, I want to put in here right now, if I can. The Houston GLBT Political Caucus meets this Wednesday. It'll be meeting this month at Haven Center. That's at the corner of West Alabama and Woodhead, there at St. Stephen's Church. It's the recreation room. And it'll start at 6:30 with a reception, wine and cheese reception, and then the meeting will start promptly at 7.
And is there a speaker?
Yes.
Something she's supposed to know. We'll get back with you on that. And I just want to send out greetings and warm wishes to Connie Moore. I hope you feel very well very soon, and maybe join us for camping next weekend. And you're listening
to Queer Voices.
Queer. Very queer voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Miseducated. But this is dedicated to the whole LGBT community.
Yeah,
I know y'all suffering out there. Wave that flag.
Wave them high.
Come on, chant with me now.
Yeah,
I'm waving the flag, spreading the six color love, representing all stars. Never receive the hug. This one is for you as much as it is for me. Hold your head to the stars and let your heart speak with thee. I'm waving the flag, spreading the six color love, representing all stars. Never receive the hug. This one is for you as much as it is for me. Hold your head to the stars and let your heart speak with thee.
many be the infamous, most hated MC in the planet. Built myself a fan base, that's real. You can't deny it, being me is such a struggle, cause it's hard to be accepted. I keep on making noise for this industry to hear it. I can only be myself, live my life with no regrets. You face female MC, refugee and shame to the death. On top, don't forget, spit the truth with every breath. Number one in this game, yep. The name is double left. Got the breath that I breathe to spread my God-given talent. Rep the life of my family, loud and proud like the president. Met many peasants in my time trying to break me. Made a few enemies, first day at OLC. I was teased, bullied, some even lied on me. Tried to get me expelled so I can be a nobody. That started in 92, was hated on by many. Now I hold a legacy, they know that I be legendary.
I'm waving the flag, spreading the six color love. Representing all stars, never receive the hug. This one is for you as much as it is for me. Hold your head to the stars and let your heart speak with thee. I'm waving the flag, spreading the six color love. Representing.
And this is J.D. Doyle, and that was a bit of the song Waving the Flag by Ms. Fontaine. And she's on the cover of the latest Outsmart magazine and one of the artists performing at the Hip Hop Humble Revolution Tour coming this Friday night to Houston. This is the first regional gay hip hop tour, and the tour consists of 10 cities in 11 days. And I'm going to give this information later, but the event will be held Friday night, 9 p.m. at Club Dignity Bar, Bar and Grill. That's at 1927 Scott Street. I've got on the line a couple of folks to talk about the tour. The tour manager, Camilo Arenavar, and coming on shortly after that will be one of the main performers, Deadly. Camilo, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Queer Voices.
I'm happy to be here.
Tell me, first thing off, how did the idea for the Humble Revolution Tour originate?
Well, it started as a tour to take Deadly's performance and music to a bigger audience. He has a lot of fans in Texas and the Southwest, and it was just in our backyard. He was based in Los Angeles. So I figured, let's go as far as we can and get back to, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. And then we said, well, let's put together some other acts, and it just evolved gradually into the Homo Revolution Tour. And that's how it happened.
Why do you think this tour is important?
It's important because there isn't anyone out there letting people know that this music exists. There's the community is fond of hip-hop music, but not some of the lyrics that are homophobic and, you know, putting down gay people and what. And they don't even know that there's actually gay, lesbian, and transgendered artists out there who are making hip-hop music and rapping, and, you know, and so our own community doesn't even know that we exist. And so that's why this is important, is because it's bringing attention to the fact that this music exists. We're here, your community, and we just want you to know we're here. And, you know, if you like our music, buy our records, too. You buy the other people's records, you know, so buy ours, too.
Well, I've been researching this subject for several weeks now, and I know there are lots and lots of queer hip-hop artists. How did you pick the ones for this tour?
That was, at first it was a regional thing. Initially it was, I managed some of the artists, in the first few dates, that we had in California. De La Cruz was on there. I managed her as well as Salvi Mex. And, it started that way, but then there are other artists that have performed well with, Deadly before, like Johnny Dangerous and Tori Fix. And then it occurred to me that, you know, well, Pick Up the Mic, which is the movie that actually, a documentary about Homo Hop, and it was a predecessor to Homo Revolution. I mean, there couldn't have been a Homo Revolution tour if there hadn't been a Pick Up the Mic movie. And that was a film that chronicled 18 gay, lesbian, and transgendered hip-hop artists and just started to bring it to people's attention. And so then, you know, Miss Money was in that movie as well, and so she's on there. And Q-Boy from the UK actually expressed interest. And as soon as we started mentioning it with just local artists like JFP from San Francisco and the other artists I mentioned, and Deadly, of course, you know, who was originally on it from the get-go, people started saying, you know, we want to be on it, we want to be on it. And at some point, I mean, I've had to turn away artists because, you know, people are only going to sit through so long of a show. You know, it's not can't be like
a marathon.
Right. A marathon, an 8-hour event, you know. So we have to cut it off at some point.
I'm not going to ask you to name the 10 artists because that's kind of off the top of your head, but I've got a list here. This is in really no particular order. Deadly, Miss Money, Johnny Dangerous, Tori Fix. Is it Felony or Felony?
Felony.
Felony. Q-Boy, Ms. Fontaine, Big Nug, JFP, and Fox Gisele. And I was very pleased Miss Money was as added to the Texas tours.
Yes. I believe she... I had asked her about it before, and I believe that she had had a previous engagement, and she no longer had that engagement. And it just, you know, because I was been planning this tour since late fall of last year, and I think she had had something else planned, and it just turns out that she's available. We were going to bring Milaj Lavon from California, and she wasn't able to come, and so we said, you know, hey, are you available? And she said, as a matter of fact, I am. I'm there. So she's going to join us on 4 dates, starting in San Antonio on Thursday night, then Houston on Friday, Austin at Austin Relay Pride on Saturday, and then at the Brick in Dallas on Sunday.
Well, I mentioned earlier there are 10 cities in 11 days. That's pretty brutal. And today you're in Albuquerque, ready for show number 4. What's it been like so far?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't catch the end of that.
So you're in Albuquerque today, ready for show number 4. What's the tour been like so far?
It has been exhilarating. It opened in San Diego, and... It was a learning experience, and you know there was a good core crowd that came out to support us, and then we had the Los Angeles show, which was just amazing. There was several hundred people, and it was a small venue, so it was packed, and the audience response was just incredible. Las Vegas was nice also, but last night in Phoenix. Really, they just came out in a very enthusiastic audience, and so we understand there's been some of the same support here in Albuquerque, so we're really looking forward to it. But the road itself has been rather vicious because we're traveling in vehicles, and it's a lot of miles to cover when you're doing a show every back-to-back-to-back.
Right, what's halfway across the country?
Exactly.
With all this talent, how do you figure out the lineup?
Basically, it was a combination, and a lot of it was my discretion. I wanted to fully represent the community with a gay artist, a lesbian artist, and transgendered artist. And we did do that, and talent-wise, I wanted there to be a mixture of established artists that have been doing gay hip-hop for a while, like Deadly and Johnny Dangerous and Miss Money, and then some of the new artists like JFP and Big Nug, who has just started doing this. So when people see him, they're like, wow, you know, he's only started rapping, you know, they can't believe, because he has such a great stage presence.
Yeah, I played him on my Queer Music Heritage show last month.
He's been a hit on the road.
You mentioned Deadly. Is he available? Because I've got some questions lined up for him, too.
Yes, Deadly is available. Let me... Are you ready for him?
Yep.
Here is Mr. Deadly. Hey, what's going on?
Deadly, welcome to Queer Voices.
Oh, this is great, man.
This is a treat. I'm looking forward to seeing you Friday night.
Yeah, I've never been to Houston, heard good things, so I can't wait.
Well, I've been reading a lot about you, and lots of adjectives are used. Confrontational, groundbreaking, homo thug. Who's the real Deadly?
Probably a little bit of all of it. You know, a lot of it is just when I hit the stage, it comes out. You see me every day walking, you know, I'm just a normal gay guy.
I heard a rumor you're sensitive.
Hey, don't spread that.
Don't spread that around.
No.
You've been getting a lot of press. I've been researching in this whole subject. You've got 2 albums. You've appeared in a couple movies. You've contributed music to movies. You've performed all kinds of venues. You were in the documentary Pick Up the Mic, and I understand you do stand-up comedy. You sound like the Renaissance man of gay hip-hop.
You know, I'm just trying to do it all, just get out there and show that we're out here doing all kinds of things and not letting anyone stop us, man.
I wanted to, one thing I was impressed of studying this genre is how much the different artists collaborate with each other, and it's a very collaborative genre. And will this be present at the concert this Friday night?
You know what, definitely. You know what, I think that's what hip hop's about. Is, you know, we've always like collaborated, and you know, I'm doing stuff with Big Nug. I got stuff with Johnny Dangerous, Tory Fix. He does a lot of our beats, and yeah, I think it just helps. You know, the unit. You know, when we're doing it together, just you know, takes the message even further.
Do you think there's more collaboration with in the queer hip hop community and than in the so-called straight community?
I think a little bit. We've decided to kind of band together just because, you know, it's power in numbers. And, you know, we can, I think, get our message across, you know, to more people that way. But, you know, it's a good group of people, man. I think we're all getting along real good. And, you know, we're hitting, you know, we're in the streets all day, you know, riding to the next city. But, you know, we're all getting along. And we know this is, I think this is a higher purpose, you know.
Right. It's a great opportunity. Speaking of opportunities, you were on the CNN show Polazon Now a few weeks ago talking about homophobia in the hip-hop community. What's the reaction been to that, to your appearance on that?
You know, I was kind of surprised, man, at all the hate I've been getting.
Really?
From a lot of, you know, maybe the straight rap community. So I got some death threats after that. I got a lot of hate mail. But, you know, that just kind of just energizes me more.
Right.
We got more work to do. We got to keep on spreading our message and not back down from the haters.
Huh. Wow, that's amazing. How has your music changed over the years?
You know what? The new stuff I'm working on, which I might debut a couple songs out in Houston, is I'm kind of getting away from a lot of the gay topics. Like my last two albums, I you know, I touched on a lot of that. But it's just like coming out. Once you've talked about it, you're kind of done, you're over it. And, you know, I think as gay people, it's not all about just our sexuality. We have a lot to talk about. So, you know, the new stuff is just some fun stuff, too, where the kids can just get up, dance, and wave their hands, too.
Very good. One of your songs has impressed me. I've watched the video a number of times, Good Soldier 2. And right. I'm going to close this segment with that, and I'd like you to tell the listeners about that song.
You know, that came in response to, I've worked with gay youth for about 5 years now, and I just really felt like, you know, they've gone through a lot. Sometimes they go to school, get picked on, and I've even seen some kids end up, you know, committing suicide. And that whole song is just about, you know, standing up through the pressures of being gay in society and not bowing out to pressure. And there's a refrain that goes, I stand, I stand, I stand. And that's what it's about, is just to stand proud. And in the video, you see the boy actually jumps. But, yeah, but I don't think we got to go out that way.
Well, it's a very easy video to find. If you go to YouTube and search on Good Soldier or Deadly, you'll find it right away, and I encourage people to do that. I'm curious, it's Good Soldier 2. How come it's 2?
Well, you know, the Good Soldier 1 is actually the first part of the story where the kid actually, you know, kind of shoots himself. The second part is, you know, just kind of realizing that we don't have to go out that way. So,
and you've got one of my artist friends helping you out on that song.
Oh, Mika Barnes, is that your friend?
Oh, yeah. He's really good. Amazingly
excellent
talented.
Voice, excellent voice, yeah. And, yeah, we met up in L.A. when he was out here. He's from Toronto, Canada. And he actually hit one of the shows. He might try to hit a Texas spot. I'm trying to convince him. So,
well, keep working on him.
I'm going to keep working on Houston. So come on.
Okay. We're going to close out the segment with Deadly's Good Soldier. I want to remind folks it's at the Homo Revolution Tour 2007 at the Club Dignity Bar and Grill, 1927 Scott Street. Zip code is 77003 if you want to use MapQuest. It's at 9 p.m., 18 and over. And we want to thank Deadly and Camilo Arenavar for being with us on Queer Voices. And we're going to go out with Deadly.
Hey, thanks a lot. Huh?
Dead, dead, corpse 2213. I once had a name, I once had a family, forever young, forever your Joey. But you played the judge, you played the jury. Tried, convicted, sentenced me to death. All because you didn't understand, I didn't make sense.
I can't be a good soldier. I can't be a good son. Can't be a good lover. You're not the one.
Alone with a secret and a loaded gun, I awoke amidst the joy and confusion. I opened my eyes to a new world in motion. So I am that weapon, you're my ammunition. Calling me a sinner, yeah, you love me but hate my sin. I don't need your compassion, hate this sinner, cause I love this sin.
I got to find some way to live my life.
The hunter gets captured by the game. You walked in, saw me with whatever his name. Played the scene over and over. Pause, fast forward, rewind, reliving the pain. 8 years, December 22nd, the day. You always be my boy, always be my lover. I got you in my veins. Got to be real, man.
I stand.
Just got to be who I am, man.
I stand.
Just got to be me. Just got to be me.
I can't be a good soldier. I can't be a good son. Can't be a good lover. You're not.
Well, welcome back to Queer Voices. This is Deborah Bell, and we have one of our favorite routine guests is Sally Hupper from the Montrose Counseling Center, and she's brought with us tonight Allison Boat. Allison is the anti-violence advocate at the Montrose Counseling Center, and as we mentioned before, April is recognized as Counseling Awareness Month and Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. And there are several programs at Montrose Counseling to address these issues. So tell us a little bit about that, Allison.
Well, one of our biggest programs is the counseling program, and that is there specifically to address the issue of persons who have been sexually abused or sexually assaulted within their lifetime. As you well know, that our agency is primarily for the gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. So most of our grants actually fit in for persons who are in the community who have been sexually abused or sexually assaulted. But we also have the anti-violence program, which is what I'm an advocate for, in the sense that if you've been sexually assaulted or if you've been sexually abused and you're having a difficult time sort of dealing with that and taking care of yourself and taking care of your employment and your financial needs and getting housing and going to the hospital and going and filing police reports. So then I'm there to assist with that.
Is it sometimes something that people don't really realize that that is what is really affecting them? They're just having a hard time and they can't pinpoint, well, it's because of the abuse when I was 5 or it was from being raped when I was 13.
Exactly. That's exactly exactly why people, or what people do, is they just sort of ignore it, and they think that they can self-care and take care of themselves in the sense that, well, if I just push it behind and I don't think about it, then it's not going to affect me. But unfortunately, persons who are sexually abused, either as a child or as an adult, go through a whole array of problems. They have fear of going out in public. There's a lot of guilt, massive amounts of shame. It can affect the way that your relationships are in the future. It can affect your sexuality, in meaning that you're either very hypersexual, like you want sex all the time, or you're very hyposexual, meaning that you don't have any sexual feelings. And it can lead to nightmares and just crying spells and not being able to concentrate at work. And so it's really important for persons who have been sexually assaulted or abused to go and seek counseling and to talk about it and to allow their counselor to tell them that it's not their fault that this happened to them.
I attended a rally yesterday that was held up in Conroe, and it was a very mixed group of people. It included NOW members, mm-hmm. Bikers Against Child Abuse, and beauty pageant queens. And some stereotypes were really busted among all of us in one way or another, including some of my own expectations of people. All three of these women who are outstanding women of achievement, that's the pageant that they take part in, they're all women who work on the issue of sexual assault or child abuse issues, and they all were victims who are now survivors. And it was like, oh, wow. And for them, you could just tell that telling their stories, even now, that how brave that is to do, to say this happened to me and it was really bad, but I was able to build, you know, that pageant program really builds their esteem, for one thing, and it does teach people that they can be survivors, and that's so important. So what are some of the groups that are at the counseling center that deal with those issues?
Well, we have a men's group that's for specifically just men who have been sexually abused either as a child or in adulthood.
Is this for gay men?
Yes, very specifically for gay men. And then we also have one for women, lesbian women. And of course, anyone who's bisexual is welcome to come to the group.
As well as transgender.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And then also we have a new group that's just started. It's for teenagers who have been sexually assaulted. And that's for male, female, to come to. And that's on Friday nights at Montrose Counseling Center. And it'll start April 13th.
Do you think that gay and lesbian youth are more likely to be victims of sexual assault?
No, I do not. I absolutely not. I believe that everyone has the ability to have been sexually assaulted. It's one in, depending on what statistics you look at, it's 1 in 3 girls or 1 in 4 girls, and 1 in 6 boys, 1 in 7 boys have been
that we
sexually
know
abused,
about.
That we know
don't
about.
Have any way of counting, because far too often it's not reported.
And especially reported. Among, you know, gay men, the reporting, because of the shame associated with it, there's a lot less reporting.
Right. For any man, I think that there's an additional level of, you know, I'm a man, I'm supposed to be able to take care of myself, and this happened. And certainly anyone that abuses children in any way, I always say there's a special curse upon them.
Well, and I recently spoke to one of our therapists who was talking about that sometimes people believe that there is a greater prevalence of sexual assault among gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender adults who were molested as children. And in the past, many people thought that that may have caused,
right,
you know, the homosexuality, gender identity issues, etc.
I read a nonfiction book. The kind of the premise of it was that there were these women that had become lesbians because they had been sexually assaulted or incested when they were younger. It was later made into a movie that starred Ellen Barkin, which didn't stick true to the story. It was set in Houston. That's not quite what the movie, the movie didn't tell the story quite the way the book did, but the premise of that.
Well, and the therapist that I was speaking to was talking much more along the lines of, we're talking about, in many cases, predators, people who are looking for somebody that they can prey upon, somebody that they think they can get away with. And so sometimes, because they're able to kind of identify who they're going to be attacking, that they may just find somebody who might not be comfortable in their own skin, and that might be some kind of trigger that might, you know, that they might be able to zero in on the young person, the teenager, etc., who's struggling, and realize that this might be an easy target.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that, I mean, that's certainly a different spin on, you know, what we're always hearing about.
Mm-hmm. And as much as we don't like to admit it, there is sexual violence and violence that occurs within relationships. There are gay men that are assaulted by other gay men, although most people that are pedophiles are, in fact, straight men, so-called straight men who are married and have children, and sometimes their victims are, in fact, their own children.
So. Absolutely. And I want to interject that about gay men being sexually assaulted by other gay men. It's sexual assault usually occurs 80% in people that you know, people that you are acquaintances with, whether it be a first date or it be someone that you know for a really long time. In case of a lot of women, it's especially ones that have come out, I'm a lesbian, they're sexually assaulted by their brother or their father to teach them not to be a lesbian, which is absolutely ridiculous. But that's what occurs. It usually occurs in people that you know. So it's not necessarily that stranger who's hiding behind the bush wanting to jump out and grab you and sexually assault you. So I think people sort of feel like they're really comfortable with people that they know and are only aware and afraid of people who are behind the bushes.
Right. The person you haven't met before the stranger. And you know, let's go look for my puppy. I've lost my puppy. I think children are really becoming more and more aware, and they know to go to their parent. But there's still far too many that aren't aware of some of the things that they can do to help themselves not be victims. But it always boils down to they're never at fault, because it's the predator's fault. It's not the victim's fault under any circumstances. There are times, though, where someone might be compromised because they've been drinking or using drugs. And so their guard might be down a little bit, and they might be a little more vulnerable to one of these predators.
Well, it's sort of like what Sally said, that predators look for people who are vulnerable because they're easier to assault. However, it's very important to remind people that if you're drinking or using drugs, you still have the right not to be sexually assaulted. So
right.
If you're out at a bar and you go out to breakfast or you go home with somebody and you say you don't want to have sex with them, that's your right to not have sex with them. And if they force that upon you, then that's sexual assault. No matter if you were drinking and drugging, I don't care. You were sexually assaulted and you deserve every lawful thing that comes to you. And you deserve to be listened to and to be told that it's not your fault. And I think a lot of people just believe that, well, if I didn't go to the bar, if I wasn't out at 2:00 in the morning, then this wouldn't have happened to me. And maybe it wouldn't have, but that doesn't mean that it's your fault or that it should happen. I always say people have the right to walk down the street naked and expect not to be sexually assaulted. You might not expect to not be arrested.
In Houston, you're likely to get a sunburn.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? Our time has already run out for us to talk about about this, and I know that we just touched, you know, the tip of the iceberg on it. Before you we close out, let's give the contact information.
Montrose Counseling Center, the phone number is 713-529-0037, and we're on the web at www.montrosecounselingcenter.org.
Thank you, Allison and Sally, for being with us on Queer Voices.
This is J.D. Doyle, and you may have figured out who that is. That's not Janis Joplin. That's Melissa Etheridge, and I took that track from her greatest hit CD, The Road Less Traveled.
Melissa does Janice's songs almost as good as Janice. This is Deborah Bell, and we're in the studio with Karen Stewart from the Alley Theater and Gina Gilstrap, the Executive Director of the Southeast Legal Clinic. And they're here to talk about the Act Out event that the Alley Theater holds for the GLBT community. And it will be on this Thursday. So what's in store for us, Karen?
Well, we're going to have a wonderful Southern Festival. It will be with Southeast Texas Legal Clinic. They're coming in with us as a partner. We're asking for patrons to buy a full price ticket, and 20% of the proceeds will go to Southeast Texas Legal Clinic.
So, Gina, what is Southeast Texas Legal Clinic? What does it do, and why is that a concern for the GLBT population?
Well, we provide free legal services to low income people living with HIV and AIDS in Harris and surrounding counties.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of issues are people with HIV and AIDS faced with?
Well, they're faced with the same issues that everyone is. They're basically housing issues, public benefits, employment, immigration, civil rights, disability, and estate planning, which is something that everyone should complete. That includes your will, the directive to physician, the medical and durable power of attorneys. That's something that everyone should do, but especially people who've been diagnosed with an illness such as HIV and AIDS.
And does the clinic only provide services with those affected with HIV and AIDS?
At the time we do, we're hoping to expand our services to help low-income people with any terminal illness and also crime victims in the GLBTI community.
Very good. And Karen, you said that it was going to be a Southern hospitality with this event. Why is that?
Well, I mean, you come back from, everyone knows a little bit about To Kill a Mockingbird, and it is in the South.
Yeah, which is the play that will be presented.
Yes, and it will. And so we wanted to tie in something a little fun. It is a great play, but we wanted it to have a little bit of fun, too. And so we thought we'd have a Southern hospitality party. Picnic tables, and just I'm loved if someone bring country fried chicken, but I don't think they will. But we're going to have like a tequila mockingbird, complimentary appetizers, wine and beer, you know, just to have a good old time and then go see a great play.
And for those people that don't know, the way this is set up is that there's a reception that starts at 5:30,
mm-hmm.
and then around 7:30?
It's a pre-show mixer from 5:30 to 7:15,
yeah,
and then we let go, the individuals go back down to the third floor to where they go see the show on the Hubbard stage. We do have great giveaways, and we have a lot of people that donate those, so
mm-hmm.
it's a good time for all.
And so you get to see a play that you're going to enjoy anyway mm-hmm. with other GLBT members, and you can buy for the series for the Act Out nights, or you can buy individual tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And they always select a community group to be a beneficiary. It's been Casa de Esperanza, it's been the
AIDS Foundation.
Several other mm-hmm. community groups that benefit. And let's talk a little bit, of course, matching it with a group that provides legal services
mm-hmm.
is a good marriage, because, of course, the play deals with justice issues. And,
absolutely.
And everyone's favorite attorney of all time, Atticus Finch.
Yeah.
I've always been in love with Gregory Peck, and I think I always will.
I second that.
Let's talk a little bit about the play itself, because I think the issues that it raises about racism can really apply to the queer community as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it can apply to everyone. Everyone can find something in their life that they've had some injustice to. So working with Act Out for 3 years now, I found that, you know, we find groups that kind of match with the play, but for Southeast Texas Legal Clinic, she actually sought me out for this. So it was a great match, if you can say that.
She's a smart woman.
As soon as I heard they were going to have To Kill a Mockingbird, I called her and said, please, please, we need to do this.
And I didn't have to think twice.
Right.
I mean, it was a perfect match. Yeah. So I found out a lot about this clinic. I didn't even know it existed, and I don't think a lot of people do. So
mm-hmm.
I just found out tonight that they actually have been in the works since 93.
Wow.
And so I just think that this was a great match for her to get the word out about such a wonderful program that gives back to the community.
Well, we're going to have a ticket giveaway. I have two pairs of tickets, and anyone who calls in 713-526-5738 and can say who the partner with the Alley Theater is for this Act Out event will win these tickets. So let's give information of how people can get in touch with the clinic.
Okay, it's the Southeast Texas Legal Clinic. Our phone number is 713-523-7852. We're at 3400 Montrose Boulevard, Suite 400. That's at the corner of Montrose and Hawthorne, right in the middle of the Montrose area. And you can also email me at director@setlc.org.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, tell me a little bit more about this production of To Kill a Mockingbird. I had not realized that it was ever done as a stage play.
We are doing it first time on our play. We're doing it right now. We got from the Alabama Shakespeare Festival. Paul Barnes is directing it, and we're really excited to have it on our stage.
And who performs in this?
Who performs? I knew you were going to ask me that.
One of those tricky questions.
John Felch. He is returning to the Alley company actor, returning to the Alley stage. John Felch is Atticus Finch. And we have some other individuals on our stage that I would love for you to come see that will surprise you.
The people that play the children, I take it they are children.
They are children.
And
they're
so
cute.
They must be pretty remarkable as well.
They are. I mean, they're working with a great cast, but I'm really excited to see it. I actually haven't gotten to see them yet, but I did see them at the meet and greet, and I did. You see them in the stage when they're walking past you and stuff. But they are so cute, and mm-hmm. Scout's just going to blow your mind. She's so cute.
Yeah,
so.
They did in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I was born in Alabama, so I really know about that all that Southern stuff. It does creep back into my voice every now and then. Well, so we've been talking with Karen Stewart, who directs the Act Out program mm-hmm. at the Alley Theater, and with Gina Gilstrap, who is the executive director of the Southeast Legal Clinic. And if you can call and tell us if the tickets haven't gone yet, 713-526-5738, and tell us who the Alley's partner for this production of Act Out is, and please come on Thursday night to the Alley. For tickets?
For tickets, you can call 713-220-5700 and just mention the promo code ACTOUT, or you can visit www.alleytheater.org for tickets, and please put in that ACTOUT so we can give 20% of the proceeds to Southeast Texas Legal Clinic.
Thank you so much for being on Queer Voices.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
There's trouble in Asia and music in the air. But first, This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle notes a peculiar episode on the U.S. campaign trail.
Arizona Senator John McCain punctured a political tire on the second day of his Republican presidential campaign bus tour in mid-March. According to a New York Times report by Adam Nagurny, the flat on McCain's Straight Talk Express occurred when an unnamed reporter asked the prospective candidate's position on the distribution of taxpayer-subsidized condoms to fight the spread of AIDS in Africa. In a shaky response punctuated by long pauses and nervous laughter, McCain deferred to the wisdom of conservative Republican Senator and Dr. Tom Coburn as he desperately sought assistance from Press Secretary Brian Jones and Senior Advisor John Weaver. Reading from Nagurny's transcript of the encounter are our Rick Watts as the reporter and Don Lupo as Senator McCain.
Should U.S. taxpayer money go to places like Africa to fund contraception to prevent AIDS?
Well, I think it's a combination. The guy I really respect on this is Dr. Coburn. He believes, and I was just reading the thing he wrote, that you should do what you can to encourage abstinence where there is going to be sexual activity. Where that doesn't succeed, then he thinks that we should employ contraceptives as well. But I agree with him that the first priority is on abstinence. I look to people like Dr. Coburn. I'm not very wise on it.
Here McCain started to take another question, but then turned back to the AIDS issue.
I haven't thought about it. Before I give you an answer, let me think about it a little bit, because I never got a question about it before. I don't know if I would use taxpayers' money for it.
What about grants for sex education in the United States? Should they include instructions about using contraceptives, or should it be Bush's policy, which is just abstinence?
Long pause.
I think I support the president's policy.
So, no contraception, no counseling on contraception. Just abstinence? Do you think contraceptives help stop the spread of HIV?
Long pause.
You've stumped me.
I mean, I think you'd probably agree it probably does help stop it.
Are we on the Straight Talk Express? I'm not informed enough on it. Let me find out. You know, I'm sure I've taken a position on it in the past. I have to find out what my position was. Brian, would you find out what my position is on contraception? I'm sure I'm opposed to government spending on it. I'm sure I support the president's policies on it.
But you would agree that condoms do stop the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. Would you say, no, we're not going to distribute them, knowing that?
12-second pause.
Get me Coburn's thing. Ask Weaver to get me Coburn's paper that he just gave me in the last couple of days. I've never gotten into these issues before.
McCain's campaign confirmed later that indeed the senator had a record of voting against government money for condom distribution. This should not be surprising if he relies on advice from Senator Coburn, famous for alleging that Southeast Oklahoma schools were rampant with lesbianism, calling the so-called gay agenda the greatest threat to our freedom that we face today, and favoring the death penalty for abortion providers. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
Too many lies have been told.
Barnes is back, Pilgrim progresses, and Freeman breaks his silence. We'll hear new music from three diverse artists later in the program. A brave gay man is standing pretty much alone in Indonesia. Growing conservative pressure in his country has made the northern province of Aceh, where he lives, the first in the mostly moderate Islamic country to enforce Sharia, or religious law. Women's and other human rights groups were already raising the alarm about the interpretation of moral crimes when the police came to the door of this now gay activist man. From Radio 68H in Jakarta, Rebecca Henschke filed this report for Free Speech Radio News.
Kami nonton TV gitu ya. Terus tiba-tiba pas
we were watching the television. We were making out. Suddenly they broke the door down and destroyed some of my belongings. Then they started beating me and my partner. They kept hitting me and accusing me of being immoral.
Setelah itu saya dapat pukulan-pukulan.
That's Hartoyo, an NGO worker in Aceh, describing how he was beaten up by his neighbors. They believed he deserved to be punished because he was caught making out with someone of the same sex. He went to the police station looking for protection. That turned out to be a grave mistake.
Pada saat itu saya suruh.
The police told me to strip naked. I was really shocked. I was naked in front of them for 2 hours. They sprayed me with the hot water hose. The officers forced my partner to urinate on me, on my head.
Sekitar 1 jam atau 2 jaman setelah itu saya disemprot, disuruh keluar dengan celana pendek.
The ordeal finally ended the next day when his colleagues from the Matahari Foundation were able to negotiate their release. But before they were allowed to leave, they were forced to sign a document with their village head agreeing to stop being homosexuals. Hartono was devastated and is now fighting back. He's taken the case to the National Human Rights Commission. The body's deputy chief is Zumrotin Sisilo.
Nobody should face violence like this, whether they are gay or not. The fact that he and his partner are gay is something totally separate. The point is he should not have experienced such violence.
Atono has also gone to the media with his story. This has angered the police force. Bangbang Chukchoko is the national spokesperson.
She should have just reported it to the local police. There are the people who can handle this. She should not have talked openly about this. It will get in the way of the police investigation later on.
The gay rights group Rainbow Love Foundation has also been less than supportive. They say that homosexuals must be careful in Aceh. The situation is very different from the capital, Jakarta, where people are free to express their sexuality. Hartono's partner also disagrees with his decision to go public.
I don't want to reveal his name. This will be a problem for me because he told me not to. He warned me that if this incident becomes a legal case, then he will kill himself.
Marina Amruddin, the manager of the Women's Journal, though, says what he has experienced is clearly a human rights violation, and this kind of abuse must be talked about. She says discrimination of minority groups is a major issue in Indonesia. Atono says this is why he has strength to continue fighting his case.
I hope that it encourages others to come forward, that this is the start of something, because there are many other cases like this. And it just keeps on happening.
Negara pun tidak bisa mengintervensi orientasi seksual saya, gitu.
From Radio 68H in Jakarta, this is Rebecca Hinschke for Free Speech Radio News.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Artists representing three countries and many musical styles each bring their powerful personal experiences to this edition of The Audiophile.
If I was inside out, would you love me like you do? If I was inside out, if you could see my heart and the truth was in plain view, if I was inside out.
An artist with quite a variety of musical talents, Mika Barnes is back with a new CD. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. He's been in an a cappella group, has done rock electronica, and his new self-titled album delivers a very raw and honest emotional journey.
Well, people have been calling this my cabaret noir recording, and I like that because we really tried to get to the gut of every song and make them as pure and as stripped down as possible. All voice, all piano, no extras.
More about the self-titled album by Mika Barnes at www.mikabarnes.com. That's www.mikabarnes.com.
Is it so wrong what I want? Isn't something you can't understand or embrace? No, I'm not confined by the black and the white, live my life undefined in shades of gray. I live my life undefined in shades of gray. I live my life undefined in shades of gray.
London artist Drew Pilgrim has delivered a very impressive debut album called Magnetic Sideways Pool.
Magnetic Sideways Pull is my debut album, and it's the result of locking myself away for 3 months just to write and record. I guess it's my interpretation of life, or my therapy. I hope you enjoy it.
It's the nature of the drug to fantasize over true love when there's nothing but the present to live in. When you're touching me that way, you're making us eliminate all the barriers and all the content. Ooh, the moment we dress is the moment we change. Ooh, ooh, where heads goes the heart, and we're alone again. When will we stop playing this game before this drug begins to fade?
You can get more information about Drew Pilgrim and her album, Magnetic Sideways Pull, at www.drewpilgrim.com. That's www.drewpilgrim.com.
Too many years have been wasted. Too many lies have been told. Too many tears have been tasted on my lips. Too many dreams have been sold. Starved of light in this room, craving the warmth of the sun, I dive naked into the joy of self-discovery. I am born, I'm a free. Loving who I am, nothing more and nothing less than a free man. Free from shame, I claim my name is Free Man.
And his name is Freeman. Break the Silence is the latest album by Nashville artist Freddie Freeman.
On my new album, Break the Silence, it represents my journey as a human and as an artist. And it blends a lot of different genres together, and it creates what I think is a really unique sound.
I listen for sounds of life in the emptiness. I'm waiting for an echo. I got my ear to the ground, listening for a sound that's gonna save me. I got my heart in the guide.
Find out more about the CD Break the Silence by Freddie Freeman at www.freddiefreeman.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trenton. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting.
You have been listening to Queer Voices. Heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org.
Hi, this is Mike Savage. Does your home music collection have a diverse mix of all types of music, including rock, folk, world, blues, bluegrass, alternative, and beyond? If so, join me Mondays at 2 p.m. for The Weave. I'll mix new music of all types into a consistent whole for those who truly love all forms of music. It's The Weave, a program for true music lovers. Mondays at 2 p.m. right here on your Pacifica radio station, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
The CD that you'd take to a desert island if you had only one choice.
Maybe it would be something by...
Get up, get on up. Get
or maybe it would be a disc from...
Well, let's play it now, but with a twist.
What radio station would you take to a desert island if you had only one choice?
There's only one answer to that question.
It's KPFT, of course.
We bring you great music, news, and information each day. You depend.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.